So today we celebrate this beautiful feast of divine mercy. This feast day, really, which is a celebration of forgiveness in the church. Just to kind of be a slightly controversial, I want to kind of suggest that this doesn't really mean that much to most of you. Particularly here at a youth mass, this whole idea of mercy, it's not particularly personal for us. Now, let me explain. To kind of explain, I need to kind of give you a bit of a history lesson. I hope you don't mind. And a little bit of a philosophy lesson as well. Bear with me. Go back a few hundred years, okay? Europe was in a pretty bad state after the French Revolution. Blood everywhere, basically. You know, you had wars, you had people being killed all over the place. It was pretty horrific. Now, the young people of that generation realized we don't really like how horrible this world is. Particularly, this was coming out of a whole time where people were trying to celebrate reason. You know, if we use human reason really well, this is the achievements we'll create. And all it created was bloodshed. And so the young people reacted. And so in terms of philosophy, you had this whole new movement called Romanticism. So you went from this bloodshed with like blood flowing down the gutters of the streets to suddenly young people running off into the forests to be creative, to create a whole new world of hope. Kind of sounds a whole much better, doesn't it? And this actually kind of flourished as this whole new movement of hope amongst young people where the whole thing was to try and be as creative as you could be. Make your life into something completely unique. Don't do anything that anyone else has ever done. Dress differently, act differently, go dancing barefoot through the forest, you know, and everyone will live happily ever after. It was a reaction against the horror of reality, basically. Because they'd seen how ugly reality was, they thought, we don't like this at all. We want to just go and we'd prefer to live in fantasy, basically. Now, that kind of continued on until the early 1900s when all the wars destroyed that movement. But then it reappeared again in the late 1960s. Once again, after a period of really horrible stuff in society, you know, the Vietnam War, Cuban Missile Crisis, the world gets the closest we've ever got to blowing ourselves up in a nuclear holocaust. And so what happens? The hippie movement. And once again, people throw off their shoes and run around barefoot in colorful clothing and, you know, singing songs and let's just get into fantasy because if that was reality, we don't want anything to do with it. Now, this is basically what we call postmodernism. And you, particularly the young people here, you are the children of the postmodernist generation whose basic principle is there is no truth. That there is no God, God is dead, and basically I've taken his place. That we are God. And kind of this idea that you've got to escape from reality as much as you can. Now think of all the stuff you've watched on YouTube over the last week. It fits into that category. Basically, it's this celebration of randomness, as we talk about. You know, young people always love that term. It kind of gets a bit overused these days. It's dying out a bit. But we'll watch the most bizarre stuff because we just want to get away from reality. Why would you bother sitting down watching the news when you can watch just some guy dressed up as a banana walking down through the city, the center of the city? It's funny. And because it removes you from having to face the fact that reality is really ugly. Now, we haven't had any great wars driving this in our generation. But what we have had is chronic divorce. We've had so many problems in families, you know, addictions. Young people dealing with the pain passed down from generations. Who go home and it's like a battlefield. And so what do we decide to do? We say, we're just going to switch off. I don't want to face the real world. Now, when we get to talking about sin, this is why today's feast makes no sense to you. As much as we might like to come here and be all nice and holy and say, oh, it's a great celebration, the reality is that if I'm living my life by those principles, that there is no truth, this idea of relativism, nothing is wrong morally. There is no God because he died years ago. He's been silent ever since. If there is no sin, then why do I need mercy? This is just something for the older generation who are crippled by shame, not us. The young people, we're fine. We live in this beautiful optimism. I don't know whether that sounds familiar to you. But, you know, when I talk to young people, this is what I hear. Christianity is so often presented to us as being a moral code, and this is why it means nothing to us. I'm a good person. I haven't killed anyone. Why do I need to follow the commandments? You know, if anything, our world is kind of flipped on its head. If you've ever watched any of these debates with the new atheists, like people like Richard Dawkins and Hitchens and all these guys, if anything, we've put God on trial. If you listen to these debates, we've actually put God on trial and said, look, we as humanity, we're innocent. We've done nothing wrong, but you, buddy, you had the power to stop all these natural disasters and you've done nothing. You're the guilty one. The whole thing's flipped on its head. So when we come here to celebrate mercy, it means nothing. Or if anything, it's only on the surface where we think, oh yeah, you know, when I was 4 years old, I kicked my brother, but I'm sorry. You know, we don't really have an understanding of what sin is anymore. So how can we understand mercy? Now, this also starts to impact on our relationship with God. So often when I talk to young people around the country in youth ministry stuff, there are two things I always hear. Whenever we see dramas like the drama we just saw before, this presentation of, you know, the burden of sin that's upon us, I hear young people say, yeah, this whole thing of my sin crucifying Jesus, I know it happened, but I don't feel it, you know. I don't feel like I did that. I haven't done anything that bad. You know, I just don't kind of feel this whole sin thing going on in my life. I hear that so often amongst young people. The second thing I always hear is so many young people saying, I don't experience the presence of God. In fact, I go to prayer and it's silent. I don't hear anything. God's just not there. Now, my theory is those two questions are connected. Because if you look through the scriptures and the whole of Christian theology, basically what we say is that God is mercy. You know, God is love, and that love is a merciful love. God's very nature is that he is mercy. So the only way I can know God is through mercy. If I'm in denial of my sin, there is no way I can ever know God. So that's why these two things are so connected. If I don't believe that I've ever sinned, if I'm living in this false optimism where my life is all beautiful and rosy and wonderful, how can I ever know a God whose only purpose is to be merciful? If I do know God, it's going to be in the most superficial way. I'm never really going to understand the heart of God for me. So this is why I think if we're going to understand this feast day of divine mercy, we need to actually come back and start to say, well, what actually is sin? Where we can so often hide from that question because we immediately think, okay, here comes the condemnation. Okay, here's going to be the priest starting to say, you're all a bunch of rotten sinners, you know, your hearts are just full of rottenness. We suddenly recoil and we think, ah, we don't want to go there. You know, we'd much rather live in this fantasy world. We don't want to face reality. We want to believe that the world is okay, even if we're surrounded by evidence to the contrary. If you go to the letter of the Romans, St. Paul's letter to the Romans, St. Paul is actually writing to a society which is very similar to ours. where everyone has got these same questions saying, yeah, actually, we're fine. We don't need this at all. And it's brilliant. St. Paul starts writing to this church in Rome and he talks about them. You all know them, don't you? Them, the evil ones. You know, them. You know, they're the ones that we read about in the newspapers, the bad people. And St. Paul starts talking about, you know how bad they are. You know, they're murderers, they're adulterers. You know, all they think about is, you know, selfishness. Their whole thoughts are all about themselves. You know, we hate them. Don't you hate them? You know, if you could stop them, the world would be such a better place. And he basically kind of writes this in a way that he wants to stir up a reaction in us. That we would kind of think, yeah, if only they stopped being so bad, we'd all be much better. There would be peace in the world. At which point St. Paul turns around and says, actually, they are you. You are them. And this is his whole point. That deep within the human heart, there is this constant rebellion against God. Even if I haven't physically done these things, I've thought about them. I've wanted to do them at some point. I probably just haven't had the courage to actually act out on it, which that in itself is probably a sin. You know, cowardice. That deep within my heart, there has been this desire to do what everyone else is doing. And so therefore, I am just as guilty as they are. I cannot stand on any kind of sense of righteousness as though I'm better than you are. You know, the classic thing of, well, I haven't murdered anyone. But how many times have I murdered someone in my own heart? I'm just as guilty. Now, St. Paul then kind of drills this down further. He says, guys, this is more than just breaking the commandments. This is about more than the fact that we've just broken some arbitrary rules. Everyone, even the greatest saints, every single person has done the most fundamental sin, the sin which precedes every other sin. And my guess is you don't even know what it is. It's a little thing that he calls impiety. You ever heard that before? No. Basically, it's a failure to worship. And this is St. Paul's idea. He basically says, we were created to worship God. But what happened in the Garden of Eden was we decided to push God out of the picture and worship ourselves. And from that came everything else. The whole of human history has been this self-worship, putting ourselves on a pedestal, sacrificing other people for the sake of myself. Think of any sin you've done, you know, anger, you know, violence, pride, lust. I'm prepared to sacrifice somebody else for the sake of my own pleasure. Kind of sacrificing the whole world in this altar of myself, worshipping me. And St. Paul says that is the fundamental thing. All of us are guilty of that. And this is what has caused the damage in the world. Whether it's the damage caused by my sin or the damage caused by other people's sin. You know, sometimes that's the place we need to begin. What's the damage that's been done to you? It's been done because of impiety. It's been done because someone has been worshipping themselves and prepared to sacrifice you to get there. And I've done the same thing. All of us have done the same thing. This is what we need to be set free from. You know, as much as we can look at these classic dramas that are so often done where it's the usual sins of, you know, sex and alcohol and so on, at the core of it is the fact that I've said I'm God and he isn't. But Jesus comes in and says, I want to set you free from this. I want to truly set you free. I want you to acknowledge what has actually happened here and to realize that there is peace. And the reading we just heard in the gospel expresses this very simply and very, very beautifully. On the day of the resurrection, the apostles are gathered in fear, and Jesus comes amongst them. You can imagine these guys sitting around the room thinking, oh, here we go, now we're going to cop it. Because we all ran away when he was being crucified. We were the ones who probably crucified him by our sin, and now he's come back from the dead to try and wreak havoc and vengeance upon us. You ever thought that they were thinking that? You know, I'd be thinking that. I'd think, oh gosh, here we go. But what does Jesus do? He does two things. He shows them the wounds in his hands. He puts in their face the reality, and he says, this is what you have done. He doesn't come in and say, don't worry, guys, it's all okay. Let's just move on. Forget it ever happened. He says, look at reality. Look at the wounds that your sin put in my hands. But then he says, peace be with you. He changes the story. What should be shame and what should be condemnation, he now says, peace. This is the very thing that we're afraid of. And I think the reason why we don't want to look at our sin is because we expect the condemnation, we expect the guilt, and we think, oh, I just don't want to have to face that. But the reality is that Jesus comes in and he changes your story. Jesus comes in and he says, look, where there is shame, there is now peace. Where there was guilt, he now says, peace be with you. But he says, don't hide from the reality. Don't sweep it under the carpet. Don't pretend that it's not there. Face it, and then you'll be free. So my challenge to you is that as a group of young people, as a group of young Catholics, be a generation that's prepared to be different. Where the rest of your generation is trying to run away from reality, trying to pretend that their sin is simply not there, that what they did on Friday night no longer exists because I've just numbed myself and I can't remember it because I got so drunk. Don't be that. Be the ones who are prepared to look at the reality and say, actually, I did that. But Christ changed it. He transformed it. And so what is crippling my friends, what is causing them to be burdened under this weight of chains, for you can become freedom. It can become a reason to worship. Because you can look at your memories of what you've done and you can rejoice in the mercy of God. So as we go into the Mass tonight, I want you to try and look at your history differently. And I want you to look at your future differently as well. To look at the reality of what has happened in your life, the decisions you have made and why you have made those decisions. And be like Thomas. Say, Lord, I want to touch your wounds. I don't want to hide in shame, but I want to touch your wounds and know the reality of your mercy. There you will meet God. There you will be able to say with Thomas, my Lord and my God, I now know you because I know you through mercy. I know you because I've acknowledged my sin and I've realized that you love me. So have the courage to do that tonight.